Welcome, everyone, to a new episode of The Tap. I am your host, author Andrew Hess.
And I'm Justin DeFrancisco. What do we got on tap for today, Andrew?
Well, look who's back from Disney!
Yeah. Yeah, unexcitedly, but yeah, it's all right. You got to go back to real world sometime.
Yeah, pretty much. We can't stay in Disney forever. No one has that much money.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, not even my, what's his name? Michael Eisner himself has that much money.
Nope. All right, folks. So today on tap, we have AEW Rampage, AEW Dynamite. And I actually do want to cover as well for the for Impact, because they had Bound for Glory this past weekend as well. Yep. So we're going to go over both of those as well on all three. So first off, we're going to kick off with Rampage. We had one match for the Eliminator Tournament for the world for the men's division.
Yep.
We had a return match and we had a grudge match.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. The Orange Cassidy Hobbs match, I wasn't impressed with it for it to be A, the start of the show, and B, just in general, I kind of felt like it was very lacking.
Yeah. I've been seeing a lot of people saying that. Yeah, like, I don't know. I feel like Orange Cassidy always kind of gets beat up in his matches, but I feel like it was kind of, I don't know, like typical at this point in a way. Like, he can't just like get beat up the whole match and then like fluke win. Like, he's like just somehow gonna dupe like the whoever he's facing every time. Like, I don't know. And Hobbs, like, it wasn't his best match by any stretch either. So, you know, also, like, not saying I'm not a fan of Will Hobbs, but, like, just people that are, like, I don't know. Like, I guess, like, what does AEW see in Will Hobbs? What's the upside for the people that like him?
He's really big. I mean,
he's really big, but so is a million people. Like, there's a million Rybacks out there. Does that mean that they're good people or good wrestlers? No. So, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. But like, I don't think that he's bad at all, but like, I just don't see like necessarily anything particularly standing out, at least that like right now. Ricky Starks, obviously.
Well, that's the thing is that they're using him to, they're using commentary. Hobbs. Yeah. Oh, no. Ricky Starks is definitely great on commentary. But
yeah,
that's the thing, fun. When it comes to Hobbs, is like they need some sort of muscle for that group. Because let's face it, Hook is nothing.
Yeah.
Hook adds absolutely nothing to Team Taz.
Yeah. He's a small rookie.
Yeah. Like, so, I mean, if Hook adds nothing to it,
I don't
realistically,
he hasn't even wrestled a match yet. Yeah.
But Hook adds nothing to Team Taz.
Yep.
You already got rid of Brian Cage, because Brian Cage, I mean, I don't know what the heck they're going to do with him, if anything, at this point.
Yeah, I don't know.
But, yeah. I mean, so you have Ricky Starks to lead a faction of nobody. So you need some sort of muscle in there to protect Starks and also to be the one who takes the fall.
Yeah.
You know, so
I
that's
like, it could easily just be like Taz and Ricky Starks, like Taz just managing Ricky Starks. I feel
he could have been, but the thing is that it's, I don't know. I feel like they were trying to make Team Taz out to be something major and they just never got the ground to really get running with.
Yeah,
it's kind of like it's one of those it's like that track and field event where you got to do like the long jump to like to try to get your feet in the sand type of thing. It's like that runway. You have like such a small runway, and Team Taz just didn't make that big giant leap. It was like they ran that short ramp and they tried to jump and they landed about 5 inches away from the ramp. That's the way I kind of feel like Team Taz went.
I agree. I feel like they've now become the second least interesting faction besides the Hardy Family Office. Besides that's Jobber another... Express.
Yeah.
The Jobber Office Express. Like, they just come out and get destroyed every week by everybody. And do nothing and have no reason to be associated with each other other than Matt Hardy, who is basically almost he's a legend jobber himself, like right now on AEW. So how much money could he possibly be making to afford to pay you guys to stay on the payroll? I don't think that much, because you guys rarely ever win any matches. So
The thing is that they pay him.
Oh yeah, they pay him a percentage.
They pay him the percentage. So he's not having to pay them anything. He's the one who's making the money off of them in storyline wise, anyway. But any which way, let's move on. Yeah. So Orange Cassidy advances in the tournament. You had Britt Baker getting the win over Anna Jay.
This wasn't a bad match at all.
No, this was actually this was the good match, man. This was the match that should have started the show.
Yeah, this should have been the opener. Yeah, you have the Cassidy Hobbs in the middle.
Yeah. I mean, Britt and Anna Jay put on a great match.
I love Britt doing cheeky stuff to the camera. The one time she got it so perfectly, the camera closed up on her and she winked at it. I thought that was so cool. It was a fun match. You know, I give Anna Jay credit for somebody who's only been wrestling, I think, for like 2 years now. And she's pretty good. She's getting obviously noticeably better, every time she wrestles. So, it was a very solid match.
I would say so. And I was thinking that they were going to kind of keep this a little bit off for a little bit longer, because they had Anna Jay and, you know, Britt Baker kind of starting a feud. And then, you know, she gets the win over Anna Jay. And then she goes for Lockjaw again after the match and brings out Ty Conti, who runs her off, attacks her, you know, runs her off, and then poses with the title. And now we have that as a match for full gear.
Which I knew was I knew that was the way that they were going when they announced this Anna Jay match, because Ty Conti's been getting very over with like the crowd, like in her matches and stuff. Like
she, oh, absolutely.
Like they love her. She has such a likable, like she looks approachable. Like she's like she looks like she's very nice. Like she's like a nice person, you know. She's very easy to get behind as a female competitor. So I knew that this is where they were going, because they didn't have Ty in the tournament, and basically all of the other girls are basically being used for the TBS tournament, all of the other ones that are credible,
which is weird also, because they gave four of them a bye in the tournament.
Yeah, which, like, what is that? Maybe it's because they wanted to make it a bigger, longer tournament and they didn't have necessarily enough like credible women to be in the tournament.
I think that they could have. I mean, they could have.
I think they could have gotten a couple like local, like famous indie stars or something.
I mean, realistically speaking, they could have reached into their partnership with Impact Wrestling and brought somebody in there. I mean, Chelsea Green, they probably could have brought in, because she's not exclusive to either. She wrestles on NWA, she wrestles in ROH, and she wrestles in Impact. She definitely doesn't have an exclusivity contract. You could have easily brought her in for this tournament. You know, there's a few people that you probably could have brought in and would have been good. But I mean, whatever their reasons are, it is. But
for that tournament anyway, like it had. Like, I think this title is made for Jade Cargill, because they don't have a they don't want Britt to get beaten, and they don't want Jade Cargill to get like beaten by Britt, because then it just kills any momentum that she had as like this like powerhouse, you know, like force that that they're trying to build her to be.
Yeah.
And she also needs more experience, you know, so she's not like ready for the big belt. This is like sort of her like trial run to sort of also keep her away from Britt Baker and let her squash a lot of like secondary.
Well, you also don't want it to be heel versus heel.
Exactly, that as well. You know, there's many reasons why they want to keep them away from each other, but they're building Jade to a point where eventually it should show in the rankings that she would probably be the next number one contender. But if she has the TBS title, that will be more of her focus rather than going after Britt, because I think they're going to do Britt. Thunder Rosa again. Thunder Rosa is going to lose in the tournament, and then she's going to be the next feud most likely for Britt Baker.
I still think that they should have gone with Thunder Rosa in the first place instead of Ty Conti right now, but that's for another time.
I think it's to make people think that, because she's the only credible person besides like who everybody thinks like it just makes sense for Jade to win the title, but like Thunder Rosa is like the only other like a serious contender in there that people are saying,
yeah,
for a TBS champion.
Ruby Soho. Yeah. All right. So next up and final for Rampage, at least, we had the return match between Pac and Andrade. Pac gets the win.
This was match of the night.
Oh, obviously, it was match of the night.
They destroyed each other in this match.
it was hands down the match of the night. I mean, probably I'd almost put it as match of the week.
Yeah. It was good.
It was a great match, and then you end it with after the match, he didn't even have a chance to celebrate. Malakai Black comes out, like the lights go out. Malakai Black is out. Spits the mist in Pac's face, and then him and Andrade just team up to start pounding on Pac, and then you have Cody Rhodes making the save, which got a huge pop from the crowd, which was a bit surprising because the crowd's been usually
booing.
I
feel like the live crowd though, when he comes out randomly, always cheer him because like they're like, oh my god, it's Cody Rhodes. Like,
yeah, but, I guess so. I mean, here's the thing, and we'll transition that straight over to Dynamite, where Cody got the win over Malakai. I mean, here's the thing when it comes to Cody Rhodes. Yeah, he could be a good draw. People definitely like him as an in-ring performer. The problem that we have is it's a company to be building new stars. You're one of the EVPs. I know he's not sitting there and purposely going out of his way to book himself to be the winner, but he's not trying to bury people, but it still continues to seem that way. This time it was slightly different. It didn't really seem like he's burying Malakai Black because Malakai Black's already beaten him twice.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like the build for this third match was like non-existent.
Yeah. And
the second match, there was like really no build for it. I mean, Malakai Black destroyed like members of Cody's Nightmare Family bullshit, and it was why he needed to come back and take on Malakai Black that second time. And then he lost. When he lost that second time and Arn Anderson's now trying to pull him away, they should have dragged him away for a longer period of time. It was only 2 weeks since Arn Anderson cut that promo on Cody. Maybe a month since they actually had match number two.
Yeah.
I'll give him a little measure of credit. Maybe a month and a half.
I'll tell you why I think this was the wrong choice, even with the Black winning both prior matches, is I think that he should have won because like what does that do to have Cody Rhodes win? Like, where does the story go from here? Like, because now, like, what is all that like teasing of like possibly like maybe Cody snapping and like beating the crap out of Arn for like making him feel like a little, you know, bitch, for lack of a better term. You know, like, where does that go? Like, Cody losing could have made Arn get in the ring and like push him around and be like, see, I told you, and then go to walk out on him, and then Cody like turn him around and, you know, give him a crossroads or like a punch to the face or something. You know, like, I feel like that would have been the better way to go, because now where does Cody go from here? Now he's just regular baby face back with Arn Anderson again. Like, it's, yeah, like, no,
there's
problem.
Nothing happened. There's nothing to this feud right now. There's nothing.
It's like they just reset it back to like after the first match. It's like, right, the second and third match didn't even happen. Now it's like it's you're back where you were prior to the Arn Anderson Glock promo, which I thought was going to go somewhere, but apparently not.
No,
besides him just going bang bang with his fingers tonight. Well, on Dynamite.
I don't know. I wasn't really, like I said, I wasn't really too keen on it, but.
No, me neither. This was what I was least excited for, and it was the main event. So
we're going to go into the other eliminator tournaments and first round matches when it comes to AEW titles. Bryan Danielson gets the win over Dustin Rhodes by guillotine choke.
Yep.
Which was a pretty good match.
Yeah, it was pretty decent. This opened, did it not?
It opened the show, yeah. You had Eddie Kingston advancing over Lance Archer, which
might not
have
been the case.
Yeah, I mean, I had predicted before the show ever started, when I heard that, I'm like, Lance Archer is going to get the win.
Yeah, I feel like he should have, yeah.
And
like,
I think that
sense.
He may have been booked to do so. I don't
but
know.
But he couldn't.
But he couldn't finish. Because after he hit that moonsault, he literally landed on his head.
And he is like he's like a 300-pound man. Like, so that's like whatever, 280 pounds of his body, like, weight, yeah, crashing straight on his neck and head.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
yeah,
if he doesn't have a broken neck, I mean, I haven't heard any reports on him
since
then.
I can imagine, though, he's got to have some sort of, like, that, like, made me cringe almost as bad as, like, nothing's as bad as that pile driver to Stone Cold Steve Austin. Yeah, but, like, that, like, gave me, like, flashbacks of Austin taking the pile driver, because when they played the replay, like, I was like, oh, it looks worse in slow motion. Like,
it really did.
So bad. Yeah, it was, oh God, straight on his head. And I don't even know what happened, because he looked like he was getting a good rotation and then it just stopped, like, all
mid,
of a sudden.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's like he's supposed to have fully gone with the rotation.
Yeah,
he just, like, stopped.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, whatever. Like, he might have jumped a little too early. He might have lost his balance as he was jumping. You know, whatever it is, he's a big man. I know he's done moonsaults and plenty of other.
That's
stuff
why
like
I don't
that
like
before.
Doing the moonsault that way. I always. Yeah. So I've tried doing moonsaults. First off, I have an issue when it comes to, like, my body. It just does not do a backflip. It can't.
Yeah.
I physically cannot do a backflip. I don't understand why, but. Whenever I used to try to do a moonsault, I always, like, I kind of did like the Bam Bam Bigelow moonsault, where it's like your body shifts to the left and your whole body carries over. So it's like you're not doing a full moonsault. You're not doing the backflip for it. You're going off to the side and kind of landing it.
Yeah, you're doing like what they do, what they call like in like motocross, when they do like that X game stuff, they have regular front flips and back flips, and they have ones where they're kind of spinning to get more rotation. Those are known as like slightly easier for people that aren't good at back flips or front flips, because it gives you more like torque. So you get kind of more.
Explains me.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it gives you more power. It gives you more speed so that you rotate a little bit quicker for people that also aren't able that are also afraid to go backwards straight on their head. Cause me too. That's the thing with me, is I could do a front flip on a trampoline. Can't do a backflip.
Yeah. I can do a front flip. No problem.
Yeah. No backflip though. But yeah. So that's why it seems like, obviously, after that Archer rolled out of the ring, you know, they had the doctor come check on him. And then this is had to be exactly what happened. This is why Like it could have been that Kingston was supposed to win a different way. Yeah. So basically he had to roll him up. And even Kingston, though, like, you could have picked a little bit safer of a pin.
I honestly I wouldn't have even gone for the pin. I would have, if they thought that there was any kind of safety issue. Well, not even that. They should have, when Archer rolled out of the ring, they should have let him be out there. Referee should have just kept counting, made a 10 count, and counted him out.
Yeah, well, it's easier in hindsight to think about it after that. On the fly, the you know, Bryce Remsburg was probably like, or whoever the ref was, I think it was Bryce, was like, I'd be freaking out. Like,
anybody in general that should have, like, that was there to make that kind of a call, whether it was Tony Khan, whether it was the referee, whether it was another like producer or coach or whatever the hell they want to call him in AEW that was in the earpiece, they should have sat there. And as soon as Archer rolled out of the ring, they should have said, count him out. Just out of safety and precaution, they should have said, count him out of the ring, send the doctor to go check on him, and just count him out. That's what they should have done.
Yeah. Although, like I said, like even at the end, like dangerous pin, I feel like that Kingston went for, but man, it looked really good though. He did like a nice, like fancy roll up.
Yeah.
That like was kind of believable after, even if Archer wasn't like shoot injured, which he definitely had to be a little bit, but you know, like he made it look like he still did something fancy and just like sort of caught him up, even though like most of the people had to know that that's why that was done that way.
Yep.
Right away.
All right. So moving on to the women's tournament for the TBS title, Ruby Soho advances over Penelope Ford.
Yep.
And then she got a roll up win on that. So yep. Then right after the match, the bunnies coming after her, you had Penelope Ford coming after her. Ruby Soho looks like she's about to take them both on, even though she's already starting to feel the effects of the match. Out comes Red Velvet to make the save, and they run off Penelope Ford and the bunny.
Yep.
The other items that I had were not about Bobby Fish's match itself, but it looks like Bobby Fish's first feud is going to be against CM Punk.
Yeah, his first official feud, and he's turned heel.
Yeah, I like it. Because
he was babyface when he came in. Yeah, no, he's definitely better as a heel. He plays better as a heel, for sure. Oh, always. He's got that natural evil guy twirly mustache too. Like, it's just perfect.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
exactly. Yeah, that's what I imagine, especially with him with the mouth guard in his mouth. Like, it looks like he just naturally does that. Yeah, yeah. You know, like, so
I would if I had that mustache, man.
Yeah, right.
I'd be twirling that thing.
Yeah, right.
Every time I had like an evil thought, I'd be twirling that thing, man.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, so he what's his name? Anthony Green.
Yeah, I was gonna say some jobber, because I don't even remember what the
guy's name was. I just remember his last name was Green. So yeah, he basically he squashes him real quick, and then after the match, after he plays to the crowd a little bit, he ends up turning heel and basically, you know, keeps beating him up. And then yeah, CM Punk comes out for the save. Yeah, that's pretty much it. So now they're gonna be going into a feud, it seems.
Yep. Which I'm excited for, really.
I'm happy about it, because it's
I want to see that match, man. I really want to see it.
I've ever been in Bobby Fish, to be honest. Yeah, other than Red Dragon. Yeah, I mean, like, singly, in like a singles kind of match or something. Even though that, like, mostly, like we've said, yeah, he's been with Kyle O'Reilly for a lot of his career. But, anyway, like, I don't know. I'm just ready for CM Punk to turn heel, though. And I know it's not going to be this feud, because it just wouldn't make sense, I don't think. But I think, like, hopefully the next feud that he gets into is a feud with somebody that he's able to, like, turn heel on, like some sort of like thing where maybe like he saves somebody else from something and then like ends up turning on them or something, or like later, I don't know. But I just hope that he turns heel soon. I'm ready to see heel CM Punk again.
I would love to see a good heel CM Punk. I just don't feel like that
in real life.
I don't,
like, come on, let's be honest.
He is, but I don't feel like he's there just yet when it comes to AEW. Like, it's not, it's close, but I don't feel like a heel CM Punk is going to be there just
yet. I know. I'm a little early on the curve, but I still think that give it like probably 2-3 months, I think he might be turning heel. I hope anyway.
I don't know. We'll see what happens with it. Only time will tell.
Exactly.
The final. Well, actually, no. Sorry, I had two more things for Dynamite. First was the Sting, MJF, and Wardlow segments. So obviously they took down Sting between Sean Spears, Wardlow, and MJF. They wound up taking him down, which is to eventually bring back Darby Allin, and then going into a tag team match, which obviously we had even said it weeks ago. It's going to be Sting and Darby Allin versus like MJF and Wardlow, or MJF and Sean Spears, or whatever the case may be.
And obviously the standard of MJF promos, obviously he cut a good promo on Sting, pretty decent. I like their backstage segment that he had with Wardlow, where he calls Wardlow up and he's like, hey, because Wardlow's like, hey man, you pushed me in front of Sting, you know, last week, like what was up with that? And he's like, hey buddy, I just wanted to let you know that we're actually, I really appreciate what you're doing and you're doing a great job. But he's going to be like, I think it's from South Park, right? Accountability buddy. He says Sean Spears is going to be his accountability buddy, which basically means, you know, somebody basically to watch him, basically kind of somebody that's meant to like handle him and report on Wardlow, you know, basically, because I guess MJF is starting not to trust him and stuff now. So I like that brewing. We've been talking about it for a while about Wardlow and the seeds of a heel turn. I mean, of a turn on MJF, I mean, like a babyface turn. So, that's going to be interesting. It'll eventually, I think after this feud culminates, will probably lead to like a Wardlow MJF, because they're still trying to keep MJF out of the title picture right now, because they still have so many other loose ends to tie up, whether it be just Adam Page, of course, but like just a number of other feuds. And then I feel like eventually, like it's not going to happen like right after he wins the title or anything, but probably like 6 months in, probably like next year is like Double or Nothing. Like he'll probably, MJF will probably be fighting Adam Page for the title, is where I would see him going next year, because they can't keep him out of the picture forever. But this is a good, they got this feud to get through, and then possibly even another one even before they fully turn Wardlow on him. So I feel like this is good. I like where it's going. I don't really care about the Darby Allin part of it.
No, I don't really care about Darby Allin.
Yeah,
I've kind of already, that ship has already sailed when it comes to me. It's like Darby was, he was interesting for just a little bit, and it was just enough where I'm like, all right, I'm done now. I don't care, because he doesn't have great matches unless they're hardcore matches or like some sort of no rules matches. Those are only matches that are actually,
but like his style is basically getting beat up the whole time.
Right. His matches are not entertaining enough and special enough to be like, to be where it's not a no rules match, you know?
Also, like Daddy Sting killed him.
Yeah.
Like
they should have cut that cord already.
Yeah. They should have long cut it.
Honestly, here's what they need to do at this point in order to save what happens with Darby. First off, I mean, you get through this feud and have Wardlow turn on MJF.
Yep.
That's one thing. But then whatever their next deal is that they go into with Sting and Darby Allin, they need to make it where Darby gets mad and turns on Sting.
Yeah.
And that's what they need to do in order to save face when it comes to Darby Allin and turn this whole thing around. Because right now his matches, his gimmick, everything is not special. It's nothing entertaining.
They took away basically everything that made him special. His little video vignettes that he had and him riding
to
the ring.
They still do it every now and then, but that's about it.
Yeah, but like barely, and they're mostly with like Sting now. And it's like, who cares? Sting just stands there and he's like, I'm sorry, guys, but like he's boring. I'm bored of Sting. When he gets in the ring and does a couple of his nostalgic moves, yeah, I'm like, yeah, that's pretty cool. But like other than that, like Sting has never been a great promo. Like his whole gimmick, his best gimmick of all time was him not talking for like 6 months.
Yeah.
So you know that.
No, I mean, I loved Sting's like old school gimmick, like the old school Sting before.
Yeah,
that was great. And then, honestly,
yeah, the Ultimate Warrior's biggest fan.
No, it wasn't that Ultimate Warrior's biggest fan.
He looks like Ultimate.
He
Warrior.
Did not.
Yes, he did.
No, same he didn't.
Face paint.
Anyone who had face paint during that time had like a similar face paint. Sting didn't have the exact same face paint as the Ultimate Warrior. He just had colorful face paint.
Yeah.
And you got to remember they were actually tag team partners too before Sting actually went off on his own.
Exactly.
And Sting was the one who started doing the face paint before the Ultimate Warrior started doing it. So.
All right. All right.
Don't get me started on that. I mean, I was a huge fan of Ultimate Warrior growing up. I was always a huge Sting fan all the way through until they killed his gimmick after, like, he finally wrestled Hogan and took the title from Hollywood Hogan. And after that, they just, like, killed the Sting gimmick.
Yeah. Yeah, Sting was always, during that time period, I felt like he was, like, always better in the chase for the title. They had no idea what to do with him once they gave it to him.
No, and it was just, everything was botched with it all.
All right, let's
continue. My final thing from Dynamite, at least, was Tony Nese being in the crowd.
Yeah, that was really interesting and cool. Also,
I was loving it.
They got his reaction of the Archer botch, too, where he was like he shook his head like, oh, that doesn't look good. Like, you know, which was pretty cool. Yeah, and they mentioned him in the crowd. Like, you know, he's seen multiple times throughout. His non-compete is up now, correct?
His non-compete is already up, yeah.
Yeah. Even if it wasn't, I'm pretty sure he's allowed to be at a show. You know, if they happen to catch the guy in the crowd, they might not have been able to mention, hey, Tony Nese is here, but like they would have still been able to show him. I'm pretty sure like it wouldn't have mattered. But that's interesting because I wouldn't be surprised if in the next week or next 2 weeks he has some sort of match on Dark Elevation, on Dark, or even like Rampage or opening match of Dynamite, something like that. You know?
Absolutely.
Which I can't wait. Tony Nese is actually really, really good. I had no idea who he was until they started doing that little cruiserweight hour that they used to do like on Raw for like a year that they did. And then they gave Enzo Amore the championship and then killed the entire cruiserweight division.
Yeah.
But watch him all the time. He's fantastic.
Well, here's the thing.
He's strong and explosive. Like, and for like a small guy, he's like very built. And very, very, very athletic, more agile than you would think. You would think he'd be more of a ground-based guy, but he's, like, very, he can do it all.
Basically. Well, here's the thing when it came to him was, so I, again, this is another one of those NYWC connections, man.
Yep.
So my first time ever going to NYWC, I saw him win the NYWC title in their Psycho Circus match.
Yeah.
And I was just floored with how amazing he was in the ring. And then I followed him for a long time. Like I followed his career. He had been NYWC tag champion, NYWC fusion champion, the NYWC champion. He had some great rivalries. He actually went to Impact Wrestling for a brief time. So he wrestled there for I think it was about maybe a year and a half he wrestled there for. And then when I saw him at the Cruiserweight Classic, I was just like, dude, I'm like, he's going to make it big. He's finally going to, you know, like he's going to show everyone what he really has. And WWE is going to sign this guy. And sure enough, they signed him. And he had these impressive matches, both on Raw and then even on, you know, the Cruiserweight, you know, 205 Live BS.
Yep.
He had outstanding matches that people don't really even know about. Like, you would have to go back and look up Tony, you know, Tony Nese on, you know, on the network and look at some of the matches that he had on the 205 Live. The one that he had against Buddy Murphy, it was actually
For the Cruiserweight title, I believe it was for the title.
I'm not talking about the one at WrestleMania. I'm talking about the one on 205 Live, the rematch that they had. Was that one, or it was like maybe a match beforehand, or it was either a match before or a match after.
I think it was, and they tore it down. One of the rematches or the original match or something. Yeah,
they tore it down. Like, it was like a 4.5-star match. That's how good it was, you know? And like, that's how impressive he can be. He's somebody that can wrestle at a heavyweight level, but move like a cruiserweight.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So, I mean, him coming to AEW would be incredible. And obviously the fact that they put him on the TV, that's definitely an indication that they're going to be using him.
Yeah. It doesn't mean necessarily that he signed, but he's going to make an in-ring appearance. I would say in the next couple of weeks.
Definitely. So good for him. Congratulations to him. Yep. I look forward to seeing what he does in AEW. Finally, I want to go into Impact Wrestling just to do a couple of call outs from their pay-per-view
Bound for Glory. I've seen the information. Yeah, I've seen what happened. I didn't watch the whole show.
I didn't either, but things. So just to kind of give everyone the heads up who doesn't already know, Jordynne Grace became their first Impact Digital Media Champion.
Yeah, it was a male and female match.
Yeah, which is weird.
Which I'm okay with, because indies, they do it on the indies all the time, and Impact has also been a place where they tend to do female versus male matches. And I did kind of like that, because Jordynne Grace could mess up some dudes, like, legitimately, you know. So I thought that was pretty good. Like, I'm not crazy about the name of the championship, but, you know, whatever. I guess, you know, internet, just regular old, like, internet champion is taken because it's Zack Ryder's belt, but, you know, whatever.
Pretty much. We had the Inspiration. Cassie Lee and Jessica McKay defeated Rosemary and Havoc to become the new Impact Knockouts Tag Team Champions.
Yeah.
And of course, exactly what I wound up saying that they were going to do. Instead of their iconic, they turned around and said, the Inspiration.
Yeah.
They had a three-way match for the vacant X Division Championship, which Trey Miguel got the win on.
I think is long overdue. I think back when he was part of the Rascals, instead of having Ace Austin hold the title for like a ridiculous amount of time, he should have been champion at some point in there, because he feuded with Ace Austin, but instead of being over the title, it was over Ace Austin trying to hook up with his mom instead. But because I remember that was when I was last watching Impact, and then that's what made me stop watching it regularly, is around that time. Not necessarily that feud itself, but it was a number of things. But yeah, I thought that Trey Miguel, he's very good in the ring, and when he gets the right material or the right opportunity, he's can also have very good backstage segments and stuff. And yeah, he's a perfect X Division champion. It's been built on people that are his size and body type, like, you know, so it's good for him, you know.
Absolutely. We had the Call Your Shot Gauntlet match, Moose getting the
basically
win on that.
Basically a Royal Rumble or a Battle Royal, you know.
Kind of, yeah. I think it's a Battle Royal where you have to get pinned, though, right? It's not one of the, I don't believe it's one that you get tossed over.
No, right. I think it's over the top rope. I was pretty sure.
I think they
just wrestle a match or whatever. But so Moose wins that. He wins this little cereal box trophy
that looks literally, it's like the most plain trophy you can get. It's like they went on like trophies.com and they were like, no, no nameplate. Just like send it like the cheapest one you got and give it to me. And yeah, so he wins like the $5 trophy. And then what was after this?
The Good Brothers retain the Impact Tag Team titles against Finn Juice and Bullet Club. Mickie James finally dethrones Deonna Purrazzo for the Impact Knockouts Championship.
A little shocked at that.
I was shocked.
Yeah. Even though that Mickie James has usually been treated well in Impact, but like still, like I didn't really see it. Like I feel like Deonna's been like on her, like how people describe Britt Baker's run in AEW is kind of how they've been presenting Deonna Purrazzo in Impact. I mean, it, not necessarily to the same scale because Impact, you know, obviously smaller fan base and whatever. But, you know, I thought that Deonna Purrazzo was still going to be holding the belt for quite a bit until they had her face Britt Baker, which I found out from an interview that she did recently that they're actually really, really good friends. They lived together for a time, too, and trained together. And even if they don't face each other, they're even down to do some sort of a tag team, which would have been great if she kept the Impact title because champion tag teams, both being singles champions, that'd be pretty sweet. But yeah, you know, it is what it is. You know, it's just Mickie James can still obviously go. It's just to me, Mickie James at whatever she is like 40 is like equivalent to, you know, like people saying, oh, like Dustin Rhodes is like 50 something, like because women in the wrestling business usually, you know, bow out about 10 years earlier than the men do. So she's kind of at that kind of age, not saying that she looks terrible or anything, because that's not it at all. It's just I'm ready to see somebody else. Like I don't need Mickie James to have the title. I'm fine with her being on my television. She can be there every week and she can be involved in feuds and fight for the title. But does she need to have a championship reign? I don't think so. Does she need to have, is she gonna have one that I think makes her seem like credible or have a good enough story? I don't know yet. I don't know. I will reserve my judgment because I do like Mickie James. I think that she's great. But I don't know. I just thought Deonna Purrazzo should have probably kept the belt here. So
I would have liked to, but then it kind of begs the question, then who would be the one to dethrone her?
Yeah, but I don't see. I don't think Chelsea Green. Not yet. I thought Deonna should have held this belt another 6 months. You have no idea who's going to be there in 6 months. Like I feel like if, see, that's what I don't like about that is like the thing that we're also saying about Britt Baker, if not Thunder Rosa, then who? And it's like, I don't think Thunder Rosa is the better option right now. If you don't have a clear option to beat the champion, then they stay the champion because they're the best champion. Like, there's no reason to just beat the champion for no reason. I feel like they could have just kept the belt on Deonna Purrazzo because Deonna Purrazzo is the better way to go right
now. Yeah. I definitely
just
feel
it
like
on her for months until you have somebody that can beat her credibly.
Yeah. And that's like the thing is, like, I kind of feel, I feel like that they're running out of options when it comes to that. And I feel like they, this is for Mickie James to have that one more run with the title. Cause she's not actively competing in NWA. She's, you know, she did that for the one show, but she's not part of their women's division. She's being the executive producer of their women's division. She's not wrestling in that. And I'm like,
and let's be honest. I don't even know how that show is still running. They must be just burning money because they have no crowd still, not a single person in their little studio. So they're still having silent beginning of the pandemic wrestling. And when there's real wrestling with fans out there now, who the hell wants to watch that? Nobody. No. Not even people that are fans of NWA. Like, I'm a fan of a lot of the wrestlers that are there. I've tried to watch Power before, and
I've tried to as well. First off, their commentary team is just very boring.
Yeah.
And there's no, it's legit watching.
Isn't the Pope on their commentary team from like Impact?
But he has no.
I hated him in Impact anyway. Yeah, Jack Daddy. Everything he used to say would be like, "Yeah, Jack. Yeah, Daddy. What are we doing, baby?" Everything was like just him calling somebody some nickname, like at the end of.
I was never really a big fan of Pope D'Angelo De Niro, whatever his name is. Elijah Burke. Yeah. I've never been a fan of him to begin with. I mean, very small, like little instances.
Yeah.
Like I thought when he was in WWE, I'm like, Elijah Burke, I'm like, he has potential. They didn't wind up doing anything.
Yeah, and except then, like making, I think they made him ECW champion, but then again, they made
I don't think he was ECW champion.
Oh, well, he was on ECW brand.
He was, but he didn't win the title. But
oh no, I'm thinking because they have similar, like Elijah, I'm thinking of Ezekiel.
Oh, Jackson. Ezekiel Jackson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was the last ECW champ.
Was he?
No, yeah. He was, and then the show went away, and they just quietly got rid of the belt. He won it from like Christian or something like that, or Matt Hardy.
I remember
or something
Ezekiel
like that.
Jackson having the title.
I think he was the last champion.
I'll have to look that up because it's gonna drive me nuts.
He beat somebody like Matt Hardy or Christian. Like he beat like somebody that was actually credible who had the title, and it was that really ugly version too that looked like a gray United States or something. Yeah, it was like really crappy.
Yeah, Ezekiel Jackson was the final ECW champion, and he's the shortest reigning ECW champion also.
Because they gave him the belt and then they like just vacated the whole brand and the title and everything.
Yep.
Whatever.
But yeah, no, I mean, it's, I don't know. It is what it is, but here, let's move on. Cause we only have the one last topic to go over. And that was the Impact Heavyweight Championship where we had, It was Josh Alexander who gets the win over Christian Cage, bringing the title actually officially back to Impact Wrestling.
Yeah.
And so now they finally have
something. Which I was happy with because Christian did nothing with it whenever he was on Dynamite, never even held the Impact title.
No, he did. He did.
No, he did like when he came out to the ring, but not really half of his promos in the last 3 weeks. Oh, well, maybe because of the tapings. He probably didn't already have the belt.
The tapings and stuff like that might have, but every time
I was gonna say, because of the three weeks before that, like the last 3 weeks before this match, he hadn't had it. Like, he had it when the first couple of weeks after he beat Omega, and then it just sort of sporadically appeared here and there. But yeah, so he wasn't doing anything with the title. It's fine for Josh Alexander to win here. I thought that was good, but then
I was just like the fact that he dropped the X Division title to go after the
whenever
title,
they do
like,
option C, they always win with option C.
I was just like, you know what? I'm like, I'm happy. I thought this was a good move. And then they shock me even more because he literally has like the happy ending. The fairy tale ending for
had his family in.
That's what I'm saying. They had his wife come into the ring. His kid comes into the ring.
Yeah.
He's celebrating. It's a story.
His great grandpappy, you know, everybody. You know,
and then out comes Moose with the call your shot and cashes it in to defeat Josh Alexander
with
breaking,
like a single spear,
breaking everyone's hearts and becomes the Impact champion.
His family was still in the ring when he got pinned. That was insane. But the thing is like what's messed up is like I could care less. I haven't been interested in Moose since like he first came to Impact. I am so uninterested in Moose. It's not even funny. But like I was so upset to hear about this because I was like, no, like, I feel like Impact was just trying to, like, this Bound for Glory is supposed to be their biggest show of the year. It's supposed to be like their WrestleMania sort of equivalent. And it hasn't really felt like that for a couple of years, really. But like,
no, they delivered this time.
Yeah, but I feel like they tried to do too much here at the end here. I feel like they should have went with the, they could add the fairy tale happy ending. And then I feel like they kind of ruined the show and made me unexcited to watch it now. Because now that Moose is the champion, I could care less. Josh Alexander,
I don't care. I could care less with him.
At least
being
he has
the
a
champion,
championship reign. At least he's gonna have like the shortest Impact championship reign, I think.
Yeah.
Because they don't do that like WWE does, like Roman Reigns 5 minutes 15 seconds and stuff like that. Like they don't do that often because they haven't always had a stipulation like this where you could just cash in like right after a match ended. Normally, even with the Feast or Fire, you can cash in for a match that's determined later, like when it is, like, you know. So yeah, I don't know. He's got to have the shortest Impact reign, but hey, at least he can say he was Impact World Champion, and he'll win it again, I'm sure, because I'm sure now he's going to feud with Moose. Yeah. And yeah, it's going to be pretty good. Hopefully Moose has a very, very short reign and it can get back on Alexander, because I'd be happy to see what he could do with it.
Me too. Quick actual note. I was actually scrolling online, and so they had Dark spoilers.
Yep.
You know, AEW Dark. And Tony Nese is actually on there.
Yep. Wrestling. See, I called it. Got it.
He actually wrestles Fuego del Sol.
Oh, sweet. I got to watch that. I am a huge Fuego del Sol mark. I got to watch that.
I'm still scrolling through to see what else like we have on here. See if there's anything else that I'm like, ooh, I really got to watch.
Watching.
But,
yeah.
Let's see. Mostly jobber matches.
Why couldn't it always is? That's the thing. Like with Dark, all Dark and Dark Elevation, besides like the main event, normally the main event is actually like an actual like Dynamite and Rampage TV wrestler versus another Dynamite Rampage TV wrestler. You can usually still tell who's gonna win, but at least it's like more like undecided than like all the other ones, which are just squash matches. That's literally like the reason why Dark and Dark Elevation are on YouTube and why they have, you know, hours of content a week is because they just need them to inflate the numbers of their.
I will say not, and I, for people who don't want to hear spoilers, tune out right now, but they did have one session of Dark spoilers where apparently Lee Moriarty defeats Nick Camarado. So I guess that's officially done when it comes to any kind of push for that faction. They actually have an Ethan Page versus Fuego del Sol match coming up in the next couple weeks.
What I like about Fuego is he's become the darling of Dark and Dark Elevation. He's the guy that can once in a while get like a fluke win pulled out. So it's pretty, because I like that he's most likely going to get like beat up by Ethan Page and lose. But I do like Fuego matches because there's always the chance that they're going to let Fuego hit the tornado for a fluke win.
Yeah.
What's after Fuego? What's the next spoiler we got?
No, it was just about the Ethan Page.
It?
Yeah, and then there is a second Tony Nese match that eventually is on there as well, but that one's a jobber match.
Yeah.
Not obviously Tony Nese, but who he's facing is a jobber.
Exactly. Same as like we've been watching with Bobby Fish over the last few weeks, where Bobby Fish comes in and maybe on NXT or WWE, they might treat him as more of a jobber. He was not the jobber. He's the man who gets the win and, you know, does the job. Yeah. He doesn't get over on. He's the one that gets over, which is
all
great.
Right.
I can't wait to see that for Tony Nese. So
me too.
Happy about that.
All right, folks, that is the show for the day. We will be back tomorrow, unfortunately, to talk about Raw and SmackDown. Although although SmackDown was a little bit juicy when it came to part of it, so we'll get into a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. But until then, I'm author Andrew Hess.
And I'm Justin DeFrancisco. So join us here tomorrow and find out what's on tap.